call the State Government Finance Committee to order. Members in your packet, you have the minutes from March 27th. Representative Quam, you want to move the minutes from March 27th?
I so do.
Representative Quam moves the minutes from March 27th. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the minutes are adopted. Members, we're going to start off with some amendments here. I'm going to start with the A6 amendment. Mr. Gehring, would you walk us through that, please?
Madam Chair, the A6 amendment is a technical cleanup amendment to address some issues that came up yesterday that we found in the drafting of the bill. So lines 1.3 and 1.4 adds constitutional office to Article 1, Section 39. This is the section of the bill that requires agencies that are subject to reductions in the bill to prioritize reducing central administration costs and to preserve public-facing services. So constitutional officers would be clearly subject to that section with this amendment. Line 1.5 of the amendment updates the reference to June 30, 2017 in the section that repeals the State Auditor's Enterprise Fund and billing process. At 1.5, it relates to the freeze in the rates that the State Auditor must charge to the local governments. Line 1.6 deletes 2017 and inserts 2019 in the section of the bill that was raised by the Chief Tax Court Judge yesterday related to the managerial pay increases. And 1.7 to 1.12 updates some technical errors in the drafting of Representative Cresha's rulemaking bill. Subdivision 6 on 1.9 to 1.12 appears as new language, but this is actually being recodified from elsewhere in the bill, so this is not a new policy. This is just a technical correction in the way the bill is drafted.
Yep. Okay, members, questions to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A6 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. We're going to do the A4 amendment next. Representative Ash, do you want to?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to offer the A4.
And to you, would you like staff to walk through that, Representative Nash? Or
yes,
would you?
Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Gehring?
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, the A4 amendment is an amendment to the Minutes Chapter of Laws, Chapter 16E. And what it does is eliminate some exemptions that currently exist that provide that the state retirement systems and pension plans, and State Board of Investment, Campaign Finance Board, State Lottery, and Statewide Radio Board are not subject to minutes. So with this amendment, if adopted, those entities would be subject to the consolidation required by law.
Okay, members, questions to that amendment? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To Representative Nash, is this controversial at all, this particular amendment, or who gave it to you? Anything you can tell me about it?
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Johnson, I never do anything controversial. No. Representative Johnson, good question. It's early, so I thought I'd go for the joke. I think we've heard from minute, particularly yesterday, that essentially data is just data, and moving these in is going to provide some further efficiencies. And these holdouts have really kind of dropped the plow on the idea of minute and consolidation, and them saying, "Well, no, this is not what we're looking for." So that's the intent of this amendment.
Representative Johnson.
Okay, I don't know if there's anyone from minute that wants to say anything. I guess they can if they want. Nobody does. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions, members? All those in favor of the A4 amendment, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. I'm going to do the A1 amendment. Mr. Gehring, you want to walk us through the A1 amendment?
Madam Chair, the A1 amendment subjects the Child Support Task Force that is currently meeting to the open meetings law.
Okay, members, questions to this? Same. And the A1 amendment. Representative Johnson?
To research, Madam Chair. Can you just restate what you said again, what the A1 does?
Mr. Gehring?
Madam Chair, from Johnson, the A1 amendment subjects the Child Support Task Force to the open meetings law.
Thank you.
All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. We're going to do the A2 amendment. Representative Detmer?
Yeah.
Do you want staff to walk through it?
Yes, and I can make some comments too.
Okay. Mr. Gehring?
Madam Chair, the A2 amendment is a bill that's it contains language that's in a bill currently being carried out in Cornish, and it provides some disclosure requirements for individuals who receive veterans benefits.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, just, you know, it's a common sense thing when veterans are asking for help for some of their benefits. Most of those answers, most of those questions can be answered through the county service officers. So it's important that they're directed towards that source first. So.
Okay. Members, questions to the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. We're going to do the A5 amendment. Representative Omar, I believe this is your amendment. To your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A5 amendment removes the cap for it removes the 1% cap. One of our last compensation contracts that was negotiated was up to 2.5, and I think we currently are able to negotiate and allow bargaining units to do so, and I think the cap's unnecessary.
Okay. Members, I'm going to encourage you to vote no on this amendment. Any other questions on this amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A5 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. The amendment is not adopted. We have the A3 amendment, Representative Johnson. Oh, and Representative Flanagan, just in time. Would you like staff to walk through your amendment, Representative Flanagan? Mr. Gearing?
Madam Chair, this the A3 amendment is Representative Flanagan's amendment. It contains language that comes from Representative Ewaking's bill. This would replace what's currently in the bill that requires the Department of Revenue to provide a free electronic filing system, and instead requires the Commissioner of Revenue to do a written report to the legislature by March of 2018 on that topic.
Representative Flanagan, to your amendment.
Thank you. So the benefits of this amendment, I think, is that authors, Representative Joaquim and Senator Rust on the Senate side, have worked with all stakeholders over the last 2 years to come up with this proposal. This is a thoughtful approach. It takes time to figure out what will work. It allows the Department of Revenue to work with current vendors to see what the cost would be to provide this free service for everyone. And if people are able to file their state income taxes online at the same time as their federal taxes, it keeps them linked to make fraud harder. It is a private-public partnership that allows people to have choices. It does not replace a private sector with a government-run program. And by using a private vendor, it allows wizarding function to help folks work through their taxes to avoid mistakes. It's not just a PDF that they can fill out or a form that's populated that's already on W-2s. So basically, the only information that Department of Revenue has currently. So that is to the bill, and I think it's a thoughtful approach that takes time for us to figure out what it would really take to do free filing.
Okay. Members, I'm going to encourage a no vote on this amendment. When we heard Representative Joaquin's bill in committee, she had an appropriation of $175,000 to do this task. Minnesota already offers a free file for a vendor-based free file up to, I believe it's $64,000 here in the state of Minnesota. So this is just redundant for what we already have. So we would be repeating the same thing that we already have. So members, any other questions? Representative Olson.
So thank you, Madam Chair. To the point about this one and the cost that you said with the fiscal note, but my understanding is what we have in for the free tax filing piece, the year bill, we have no appropriation to the Department of Revenue for that. Is that correct?
That is correct.
But at the same time, we're also cutting the Department of Revenue. Is that correct?
You bet.
Okay. So I would go ahead and support this because this seems to have less of an effect on the Department of Revenue at a time when we're cutting the Department of Revenue.
Okay. Members, any other questions or thoughts? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A3 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? No. The amendment is not adopted. Members, we have the, what was this, with this call then? DE, Mr. Gearing, how do I phrase this? A17-2799?
One more oral amendment to add to the
okay.
bill.
All right, Mr. Gearing, help us out.
This is also just a technical correction to the drafting on page 11 of the bill, line 26. There's an incorrect reference to the Minnesota Public Educational Radio Stations. It's actually, the full title is Association of Minnesota Public Educational Radio Stations. So the oral amendment would be line 11.26 before Minnesota insert Association of.
Members, did you all get that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All those in favor of the oral amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Do we have anything else, Mr. Gearing? Okay. Members, Yes, we were going to. Commissioner Franz, we had some questions for you. Thank you for reminding me. Commissioner Franz, we have some members that have some questions for you. Representative Nash wanted to probably start here. So, Representative Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, Commissioner.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Representative.
Commissioner, yesterday we had chatted with you just yesterday. Yesterday we had talked about a couple different things in your testimony, and the topic of gain sharing came up, and you, I believe, said that it was reckless and irresponsible of us for to cut that. And to frame the conversation initially, Mr. Gearing, would you mind reading the statute, that covers gain sharing and sort of outline for us the requirement of gain sharing?
Mr. Gearing.
And while he's doing that, while he's getting to that, since I threw him a curveball, members, I'm distributing to you something that you got in your email earlier in the month, I think it was this month, about the gain sharing program. We got a spreadsheet that I think is kind of interesting. It's got some projects that were put in for gain sharing payment. And Commissioner, I appreciated yesterday your conversation that said that the buck stopped with both you and the governor on these issues. So I think if Mr. Gearing's ready, I'd like him to read the requirements for gain sharing before we go into the line of questioning.
Mr. Gearing.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, so you can see the existing language for the employee gain sharing system on page 41 of the bill. This is being amended by the bill in front of you. So the existing law reads as follows. It's section 16A.90. It says the commissioner shall establish a program to provide one-time bonus compensation to state employees for efforts made to reduce the cost of operating state government or for ways of providing better or more efficient state services. The commissioner may authorize an executive branch appointing authority to make a one-time award to an employee or group of employees if a suggestion or involvement in a project is determined by the commissioner to have resulted in documented cost savings to the state. Before authorizing awards under this section, the commissioner shall establish guidelines for the program, including but not limited to, one, the maximum award is 10% of the documented savings in the first fiscal year in which the savings are realized, up to $50,000. Two, the award must be paid from the appropriation to which the savings accrued. And three, employees whose primary job responsibility is to identify cost savings or ways of providing better or more efficient state services are generally not eligible for bonus compensation under this section, except in extraordinary circumstances, as defined by the commissioner.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. So I would assume that you're pretty familiar with this program.
Madam Chair, Representative, and I'm not sure what program you're referring to.
The gain sharing program.
Yes.
Commissioner, are you familiar with the gain sharing program, correct?
Oh, Madam Chair, I said yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry, I couldn't hear some of the conversation. Madam Chair, thank you. And Commissioner, did you get one of these handouts from the page?
Madam Chair, Representative, I did.
Okay. So, first of all, I guess my question is, why the redactions? Because I find that odd. It's public information of people that are getting money from the state, and I'm just curious as to that. But and we'll come back to that. But on the second page, there's an individual, I think it's number 15, that I'm going to read this because I'm trying to figure out what the amount saved on this was, because by statute it should be $7,500 or so. But the description of why this person received the disbursement was an above and beyond performance as assistant division director during one of the busiest legislative sessions, hired and trained multiple, coordinated several projects, coordinated the HRM move, all with a smile and a can-do attitude. And I think that's great that we have smiles and can-do attitudes, but my question is, did that actually save $7,500? And what were the metrics that were used?
Because according to the bill and according to the statute, it's a law that says that you're supposed to save and demonstrate that you save money. And to date, we've yet to hear that your department has actually saved money and can demonstrate. When Mr. Pollard was here and we asked him, he essentially said, we don't really do this program. We just kind of give this reward money away. And since you weren't here, I thought, you know, this is a great time to ask you that question. Have we actually saved any money?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative, well, first of all, I haven't seen this document before. It's usually helpful if you want information to send the document ahead of time so that I can look at it and discuss it. So it makes it difficult to look at a document and not having seen it before. But secondly, the most important point is that on July 15, 2015, we reported to Chair Anderson and, at the time, Chair Saxhog on the gain-sharing report or the legislative report requiring that we report on that, where we spelled out in detail the way that we had been able to implement the Achievement Award process to reward people for exemplary duty, for cost savings. Now, we were unable, we didn't have a program in place to actually characterize and calculate the actual savings. So part of the issue that we have raised in this bill that we want to talk about today is the fact that there is a cost to implement a structure to calculate the actual savings that are made. As you would suggest, Representative, we simply don't want to provide money to people who we can't establish that there was a savings. Savings are difficult to calculate sometimes on certain programs. For example, as I said yesterday, we saved $20 million just by implementing our premium relief program instead of the legislative program in January to provide relief for citizens. Am I in line for a gain-sharing award under that statute? I don't think so. But the point is, it's difficult to budget for and know exactly what a cost saving is. So we need to implement a new, so we would have to build a program where we would have people who would review each one of these applications for a gain-sharing cost savings, which is what, if the statute requires, that's what we'll do. But we don't have that structure in place. We weren't given any money several years ago when this law was passed to implement that program. We implemented a program with achievement awards that we felt that satisfied the statute in principle, and a lot of other states use the same process where they use achievement awards or something like that. And so we would require some additional staff to process and review the different award applications under this statute, Representative.
Representative Nash.
And thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Commissioner, if I'm correct, and I think maybe Ms. Roberts can correct me if I'm wrong, but the neighborhood of amounts that have been paid under this program by your department have been like $6.78 million. So by logical extension, using the statute, you should have ostensibly saved about $67 million. And maybe I'm just, you know, a little pedestrian in my thought process here, but if you're going to pay out $6.7 million under this, you should have saved $67. And I got to think that somewhere along the way that would have popped up in somewhere like one of the budgets saying, you know what, we saved a ton of money and you'd be proud of us. I haven't seen that. None of us have seen that. But you're here, and I'd like to know, have you actually saved under this program $67-some-odd million, because you've paid out 6.7 over time using this statute?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative, we paid out achievement bonuses based on providing efficient and more cost savings measures. We do not and did not measure those cost savings because we did not have in place a structure that was able to calculate exactly what those cost savings would be and then award those cost savings.
Representative Nash.
Well, Madam Chair, I didn't look at you there because you're going to give me the let's move on look. But this is a lot of money, Commissioner. This is a lot of money that we should have saved. We paid out. The law outlines it, but you decided to give out these rewards even though you can't figure out how to calculate that because you've got apparently no internal ability to track a project, like maybe a spreadsheet. I'm just flabbergasted that we're paying people $750 for standing up a web page and having great customer service with a smile. I expect that of people who work here. This is a service industry. This is something that should have been done. They don't need to be compensated unless they actually saved money. Now, to my second question, I'm curious, and I apologize, I thought you had seen this document because it came out of your department, and why the redactions?
Madam Chair, Representative, I'd have to ask. I have no idea.
Okay, is your staff, is Mr. Thank you, Madam Chair. Is Mr. Pollard here? Can he tell us maybe why the redactions? No?
Mr. Pollard?
Mr. Deputy Commissioner Hudson.
Mr. Hudson, can you help us out?
Mr. Hudson, reportedly those redactions are for those folks who did not get an award.
Representative Nash?
Well, Madam Chair, on line 12, I'm not so sure that's correct because there is a redaction made, but there's a payment noted, unless I'm reading that incorrectly. And then there's another one on line 16 that's got a payment there, and there's a redaction. So, shall we try again?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't appreciate the comment. The point is that some people who are nominated don't get awards, and sometimes there are multiple people who get an award. In this particular case, not all the people listed as nominees got the award.
Madam Chair, I guess, I'm just kind of disappointed that we're doing this type of reward. I love the idea of gain sharing. If we can have members of state government actually capture savings that we can point to and measure in a repeatable, almost a scientific method process, that's fantastic. Because it ultimately saves the people of Minnesota some money. But this is a farce. And I had originally had an amendment drafted to kill off the whole thing because it's just throwing money out the window. I just think that it's ridiculous that we go down this path to fritter money away, to reward people for doing something they should have been doing anyway, and then come back and say, well, we didn't have the ability to measure it, so therefore we chose not to abide by the law, and we just gave the money out anyway. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Commissioner, I didn't quite catch what you said. So why were the names redacted? Why were they crossed out?
Madam Chair, there are many times a number of nominees for a particular award, and not everyone in the nominee list gets the actual award. And so only those people who actually got the award were listed in the column where there was an award.
Okay, so the ones that are crossed out, they didn't actually receive the award, is what you're saying?
Correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I guess I'm most concerned with is the department making law itself. I mean, to me, this was quite defined. It says determined, resulted, documented cost savings, and yet a program was designed to do something completely different. Where was the authority to do that program?
Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Representative, we implemented the program as best we could with no additional funding to provide the infrastructure to calculate these costs. So what we reported over almost 2 years ago to this committee was our results in implementing the Achievement Award process as a way to implement the principle of gain sharing, which other states have done as well. So we followed the law as best we could and implemented a process to reward people for cost-saving efforts.
Representative
Madam Chair, and, if the staffing wasn't there, I wasn't there at the time, I guess I'm just looking at it and saying that the way the statute was written and what you did are totally inconsistent, and therefore it bothers me that that was done, and I'm wondering if there's other things that then are being done to be kind of interpreted, because I've noticed now in estimated 2017 that the average compensation, from what I can determine with your full-time equivalents in the compensation, is $119,000, and I'm just wondering, that's a lot of money. When we start looking at things like this and then raising compensation throughout the department, are there other things that, and I know it's putting you on the spot for something that you maybe can't answer, but it makes me ask the question, are there other things that are going on like this as well? Because how can compensation be growing so much and yet we don't have the money to follow the law?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, well, I'm certainly not aware of any of those, Representative. This reminds me of the situation when I was a young practicing lawyer, and one of the partners came to me and said, well, Myron, do you have any outstanding memos? And I said, well, Mr. Smith, all my memos are outstanding. So I have no knowledge of any reports that you're concerned about.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I've never, having been a lawyer, I didn't understand that completely relative to what I was asking. What I was asking is that how can, and how can we go beyond what is documented in statute to set up a program, which is pretty clear, and then is there anything else that's going on like that, especially relative to such a large increase in the average compensation? When I look at almost $120,000 of average compensation, it just blows me away. So I'm wondering, are there other things that are going on? And recognize maybe you can't answer that right now, but I would certainly like to see where the rationale came to be able to go outside of the statute.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative, by average compensation, do you mean salary and benefits? I'm not quite following your comment there.
Madam Chair.
Representative Vogel?
Yeah, what I did was I went from the governor's budget book, and I just took the FTEs, divided them into the compensation, and it looks to me like it's gone up from, in 2016 actual, from 99,000 to 2017 estimated of 119,000, which is quite a bump. I recognize some of this is in the past, but if this was done to kind of circumvent things, I'm wondering what else might be going on. And kind of a rhetorical question relative to maybe the same thing with memos, but I guess I just don't see how we can deviate from statute. And the program, again, should not have been set up in the first place, is the way I'm looking at this. If you didn't have the staff, you didn't have the staff, and you can't do the program. But we have to not go beyond what statute says we should be spending. So,
well, and this kind of raises the question for me, Commissioner. So when was this achievement program put in place? Was it before the statute was changed, before we put the game-sharing program in place as the legislature, or was it after that?
Madam Chair, I believe the statute was passed in, was it 2011?
It was.
Yes.
But your achievement program, when did that come into place, into being?
As far as I can remember, before I was at MMB, Madam Chair, but I believe it was 2012 or 2012.
So, Commissioner, at what point did you tell the legislature that you needed more guidance for the game-sharing program?
Madam Chair, I wasn't the commissioner at the time that it was passed or implemented, so I'm not sure what communications were made at that time. I simply know that we filed a report in July of 2015 outlining what we were doing to satisfy the statute.
And Commissioner, when did you come into play to be MMB? I'm trying to remember.
Madam Chair, it was January of 2015.
2015. And Commissioner, you know, in 2013, and I know this is before your time, did the MMB, the department, ever come to the legislature and say, this is not doable in 2012, 2013, 2014? Did they ever come and say to the legislature, we just aren't doing this program at all?
Madam Chair, first of all, I would dispute the fact that we're not doing the program at all. But secondly, I'll have to check and see what comments were made prior to when I became on board.
I think that would be helpful because, you know, the legislature was operating under the assumption that the law that we passed was being followed. And I know that your department in particular has concerns with other legislation that we've passed. I think it's actually resulted in a veto of a tax bill because the language wasn't right according to MMB. But here we have the language. It gives you very clear directions on what to do, and yet you decided to kind of go your own route. So I share the concerns of Representative Nash and Representative Vogel. When we pass legislation, we actually expect it to be followed. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome, Commissioner. Just to be clear, this gain-sharing program is another unfunded mandate, and the $1 million in revenue that it claims, that's kind of dubious, it sounds like to me, because there's, if I understand it right, remember your testimony yesterday, they're slashing your budget by 23%. Is that correct? And then they're throwing this unfunded mandate on you. And then if you don't realize the savings from this gain-sharing program, they're going to cut your budget more. Is that the way this works?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative, that's my understanding.
Representative Johnson?
Okay. Interesting. Let me ask you, Commissioner, we had a discussion yesterday and there was some confusion with the chair, I believe, with the slashing of all these agencies on the effect on our public workers and the number that would be
impacted. We cited a number, I think, Madam Chair, 4,000. Can you give me some sense? I'm looking at the numbers that I see in the bill that puts the limit on 31,691. Now, it's my understanding in 2017 we have as many as 36,000 employees working with the state. So to me, that sounds like a bigger impact than just a few hundred state workers. Can you give me some perspective on the impact of this budget slashing, arbitrary budget slashing, has on our public worker sector?
Well, Representative Johnson, actually, if you look at the bill, it applies to the executive branch. And the numbers provided by MMB show that the executive branch in 2016 had 32,447 people. That's in the executive branch, and that's what the language in the bill applies to. If you go to 2015, we had 32,482. If you go to 2014, they had 32,259. If you go to 2013, you have 31,609. So between 2013 and 2014 is where the number that we have in this bill brings us back to for FTEs, and that's 31,691. So you were asking the state to slow the growth of FTEs to between 2013 and 2014. So 3.5 years ago, that's what we're asking the state to do. That's what we're asking the commissioner to do. We've actually put in the language that they are supposed to use retirement incentives to help achieve that goal, as well as we heard from the state auditor yesterday that she holds open a position as long as a year. So the agencies themselves have the capabilities to do that without, if they wanted to, laying off a single person. They can do that within their own capabilities.
Yeah, I'm sure, but.
And Representative Johnson, so what we're asking is to go back just 3 years. That's how much government has grown in that short a period of time. So we have grown just from 2013-2014. That's the year you guys were in charge. That's how much we have grown in state government.
I think, and I'm sure that the question was directed towards the commissioner.
Well, I thought
I'm interested in the 2017 number of 36,000.
Commissioner, what's the executive branch number?
Madam Chair, Representative, we would estimate that the executive branch number is around 33,000 right now. I think one of the difficulties is that you have to decide what point you're going to pick the FTE count. FTE is not a head count by any means. It's not the number of people we employ. For example, it includes overtime. If I kept track of my time, I'd be about 1.5 FTEs based upon the hours that I work. But for those people who do record, someone who works 60 hours a week on average would be 1.5 FTEs. So, and sometimes people work share jobs or they work a half-time job. So it's really difficult to estimate. But I estimate that at the end of quarter two for 2017, about around 33,000 FTEs. But once again, part of the difficulty is, and as you know, during the tax season, the Department of Revenue hires some temporary employees or seasonal employees. In the summer, the Department of Revenue, the Department of Natural Resources hires some employees. So there's a lot of fluctuation year to year. So I guess, Madam Chair, I would simply ask if you want to put in a cap or you want to stop hiring or if you want to cut a number of people, just tell us how many people you want to cut. I think if you use the FTE count, it's going to cause problems because what if we have another emergency, whether it's avian flu or Ebola, that we need to hire people right away? We need to be ready to respond to that. So I think the hard cap on FTEs is not a good measure to determine how many people you want to employ and how you want to employ them. I mean, one of the things that we try to do in state government is figure out where we need to have people. We don't just hire people because we have a position open. And I think the idea that we need to cut by just cutting the number of jobs doesn't really do justice to the other departments that provide services to Minnesotans, where people want to have folks available. So I just think this is a very blunt instrument to try to control. And if you just indicate exactly what your goal is, whether it's to stop hiring or to eliminate certain positions, I think that might be a better way to approach the bill if that's what you would like to accomplish, Madam Chair.
Well, Commissioner, I think that we are putting ourselves in an unsustainable path with government overall. We have a growth in government that is just
quite honestly, unsustainable. And that growth in government takes money away from the priorities for the state. That takes money away from our schools. It takes money away from our roads. It takes those resources that are very precious to just grow government. And that's my concern, that we are on a path that's just completely unsustainable. And I think that that puts us in a very difficult position. And that's what I'm asking you as agencies. That's why I sent you a letter back in December, by the way, that asked you to prioritize where you think things should be. And I have yet to receive a complete answer from any of the agencies. And I think many of them said that they were waiting for you to provide that response, Commissioner. And I'm still waiting. That was how many months ago? 4 months ago. And I'm still waiting for that information.
Madam Chair, all of your questions have been answered by all the
agencies. No, they have not.
They provided written responses, and we can certainly go through all those. If you find them inadequate, I'm happy to go through them with you.
I will definitely do that, Commissioner. Thank you. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So being you're here, I had this question yesterday. So one of the things I remember in your test when you came and testified a few months ago, you talked about the state recruiter, and you mentioned that yesterday that would be a position. And I think FTEs, regardless if they're full-time, part-time, they're people. We're talking about cutting people. I mean, that's just bottom line. So that position is one that would be gone. And so could you talk a little bit, you mentioned there were some gains in who we hired throughout the state, women, people of color, veterans. Can you go back and just, we didn't share it in your testimony yesterday, but could you tell us exactly what some of those gains were with the state-wide recruiter? And I get the idea that we grew government, you know, that there's concerns, but when there are gains like that, it seems like that's a really beneficial thing to our government, that we're hiring more veterans, that we're hiring more women, more people from different parts of the state. So could you speak to the statewide recruiter and what that would do if we lost that position?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think one of the things that we wanted to do after the census data came out several years ago, we saw the stark contrast in the gaps in employment with minorities and veterans and persons with disabilities. The governor was really concerned and instituted a diversity and inclusion office and an executive order. And so the governor and all the enterprise has been very engaged in trying to do what we can to make sure that the workforce that we have at the state resemble or mirror that of the people that we serve. And so part of that process was realizing that we have many entry-level recruiting opportunities for people for entry-level jobs, but we also believed in the statewide executive recruiter that we needed to take more opportunity at the highest levels of state government throughout all the agencies. Think about the top, I think it's about 1,000 positions, the top level directors and assistant commissioners and deputy commissioners, and really get engaged in making sure that we expanded our pool of applicants that we look to fill those positions. And we've been able to increase the hiring in those areas. We're now, are the persons with disabilities now make up 6.3% of the state's workforce, which is an improvement over what it was. We have over 7.5% who are veterans now, and 11.5% of persons who identify as racial or ethnic minorities, and 49.9% as women. So we need to, though, those numbers don't reflect the persons of ethnic backgrounds don't reflect the diverse population that we have. So we've made progress, and our hiring rate has improved dramatically by about a 25% increase in diversity hiring just this last several years. But we need to do more because we still haven't finished that. So the executive statewide recruiter was really designed to make sure that at all levels of state government, we make government accessible to everybody.
Representative Olson? Representative Driscoll?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Franz, in the bill there's a provision that talks about if employees in the state of Minnesota have and can secure insurance elsewhere through a spouse or through another source, that they would be able to be exempted from the Minnesota insurance program. And I guess I'd like to just pursue a little bit. We heard some testimony yesterday. After your testimony, and Representative Johnson had asked some questions, I just kind of want to go through with you, make sure I understand the numbers right, because as I was doing the quick math, I didn't come up with the same kind of result or outcome that was shared yesterday.
Can you tell me if we do allow state employees who can secure insurance, health insurance, from another source? And when this bill came through my committee, I required that we have an amendment on it that said you have to provide proof of insurance because given the national and statewide issues that we have insurance, I do not want anybody to fall through the gaps on this. So I wanted to have signed documentation and proof that there would be replacement insurance for an individual. Can you tell me how you calculate that there would be a loss, I should say it was asserted yesterday, that there would be kind of this exodus of people who would get insurance elsewhere, and that as a result of the savings, premiums would end up going up by about 6.2% for everyone else in the pool.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, I didn't hear that testimony, so I guess we certainly we understand the agreement that we support the policy of letting people to opt out of giving insurance to the state if they so choose. But I'm not aware of those kind of numbers and the likely change. My understanding that the estimate would be that would be a fairly small number of people who would actually opt out of the insurance program.
Madam Chair.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Commissioner Franz, we kind of heard a little bit of that same residual from yesterday's discussion that there would be 4,000 employees that would be ending up leaving. Those individuals would not have insurance, this other exodus. And Mr. Kolonjeski yesterday was the one who made that statement, and it was at the questioning of Representative Johnson. So I'm a little confused that there would be a 6.2 or 6.3% increase in premiums when you'd have fewer people in the program. And the state pays, you negotiate the contracts, but it's probably 95% or 90-10, something like that. So the state picks up 90% of the insurance premiums. It seems to me that that would be a sizable savings, employee issues aside of what the bill does, but just those individuals who would opt out. I don't think that that would create a situation of adverse selection and then have premiums go up 6.2%.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'd certainly like to look at that a little bit more and maybe get back to you on those numbers if that's okay, because I'm concerned about that as well. I think that our understanding is that there are situations where people, especially in the veteran situation, where folks who have coverage and they don't really need to continue to buy the insurance that's required now by individuals. So we just have to look at that a little bit more closely. I'll get some more information for you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Franz, I would appreciate that. It seems to me to be a logical thing, and it sounds like you agree, and I'll let you comment as you see fit on it. But if there's a redundancy where someone can get insurance through a spouse or other kind of situation and not be on the state plan, that's a savings to the state. There's insurance, net-net, everybody wins on that, it would appear to me, and actually kind of shift some of the risk to another insurance pool versus CGAP or other insurance plans. Am I logic jive with your logic on that, or are we in the same?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think we are, but that may be because my knowledge base is lacking, but let me check on that to make sure that I'm not missing something.
Representative Driscoll?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, you can just agree with me right now that we would have no problems with Commissioner.
That's true.
But again, the idea is I think that the logic makes sense, and I certainly look forward to your financial analysis of that. And maybe I misunderstood some stuff yesterday, but it just seemed to me, as I was kind of crunching some numbers last night and looking at it again this morning, it just didn't seem to make a large difference or an adverse selection issue. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Members, we've been asked to wrap up because we have a floor session. And just curious, Representative Johnson, we've got a couple more members on the list. But if we can wrap up before we go to session, then we don't have to come back. So, Representative Ward, you're next on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be very brief. It's more of a comment, and I really appreciate the conversation and particularly Representative O'Driscoll and the Commissioner's exchange just now. Just more of a comment about the challenges with emails or written communications instead of actual face-to-face. I think we're all looking for the same thing, to get more efficiency and better service for the state's dollars. For the taxpayers. And I want to flip this a little bit in that I'm concerned about the conversation about growing government as unsustainable. I agree. But I think that what we're really talking about is expectations. I think the expectations of what we're asking people to do and not giving them the resources, because we have limited resources, is what's unsustainable. So I think we need to have a little bit more of a conversation about what we expect and what our hopes and challenges are going to be, and have a little more conversation about that. So thank you.
Okay. Representative Kwan?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my answers can be provided offline. I'd like confirmation of, I'm seeing on line three of the spreadsheet that was handed and generated by your department, it appears as if the nominator and nominatee have the same last name. And I'm just curious if they're related and if that breaks any of your internal controls on the system. And then I noticed there are different values that are assigned to different projects. And since you mentioned you didn't have the capability or competence within the organization to be able to calculate savings, how did you pick values that are different on here if you had no idea what the savings were? So those can be replied offline.
Okay. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our side doesn't mind coming back either after
session.
Sure. So I don't think there's any need to hurry us through. Commissioner, just to be, you know, this is such a slashing of state government agencies again with no focus on what it is you're supposed to slash or defining what it is the expectations are you supposed to do. But just to be clear, the chair was talking about growth in state government, how huge it's getting, so on and so forth. But isn't it true that the number of employees at MMB is near its lowest point in the past 10 years, and that the required work has increased, the number of people served has grown significantly, and you have about 20% more employees than today, and at a time when the population of the state was 4% smaller. And I was looking at a thing from the Wall Street Journal that says Minnesota ranks 35 out of 50 states, or the 15th lowest, with respect to state employees per capita. In fact, we have a lean workforce in the state of Minnesota. We don't have a bulging, burgeoning workforce, and this is something that's been going on over a number of years. Can you comment on that? Am I getting the numbers right? So we can get some perspective on this.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative, members of the committee, well, I think the key, and I certainly appreciate your comments, Madam Chair, in this area as well, but I do think that we are responding to demands for services. Certainly at Minnesota Management and Budget, the need to provide the ongoing accounting services and the needs that we have to make sure that we process the checks and the payments to and from state government, the payroll that we have at the state office, the budget process that we engage in, the forecasting that we engage in, the human resources, all these take time. And in fact, the extent to which we are able to do our job really helps the people who deliver services, like the state troopers or the state hospitals or in nursing homes. We really need, if MMB is not there to provide these overall human resource services and provide the accounting services and the HR services, we're just not going to be able to deliver the resources that people want out and around Minnesota. So we would disagree with your characterization, and we think that the government that we are providing is responding to the needs and the growth in services and the increased population. But we do think that we run a very lean state compared to other states, and so we try to make sure that we only hire those people that we need. The governor, as you would appreciate, often asks us, Madam Chair and Representative, that what can you stop doing that you're doing in state government that doesn't need to be done anymore? Can you be more efficient? And if so, how? I mean, one of the things that we did at Minnesota Management and Budget and the Department of Administration was we merged our HR function so that the HR services delivered to MMB and admin were run by a joint group because we weren't that large of an agency. So those are the kinds of things we do to be efficient and try to make sure that we only spend the dollars that we need to spend, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Representative Johnson?
Well, just to follow up, it just seems if we're going to slash your agency by 23%, it'd be the responsibility of this committee to tell you what it is we don't want you to do, rather than just taking a blunt instrument and saying, don't, you know, cut all these jobs or cut your budget by this amount, but not telling them what it is you don't want them to do. It just seems like a ridiculous way to govern. I mean, you wouldn't see this in private business, Madam Chair. You wouldn't see this sort of full-scale slashing of an agency without clarifying for them what your expectations were, what it is you no longer want them to do. It just seems like common sense that you would provide some direction, unless I'm missing something. But you can comment, Commissioner.
Madam Chair, I think part of the issue that's, we all like private sector in some ways, but we also have a lot of laws and requirements to do certain activities. And so that's one thing that I did not see in the bill was a lessening of the statutory responsibilities. So, in fact, I saw an increase in statutory responsibilities. So I think that, you know, the state government is obligated to provide treatment and obligated to provide public safety and obligated to provide health opportunity. So there's a lot that we do that the citizens and this legislature has requested us to do, and we simply can't do it at this level of funding, in our view, Madam Chair.
Okay. Members, we are going to go into recess because we do have floor session. Commissioner, I'm going to ask that you come back again because we still have questions for you. And when you do come back, I'd like you to have the responses to Representative Quam's questions. So we'll start with that, I think, when you come back. And then also, Commissioner, we have given you direction on this bill of where we expect you to make changes to your budget, despite the fact that you didn't respond to all of my questions that was submitted to you back in December, 4 months ago. And I certainly can walk through that letter with you to kind of help you understand which pieces are still missing from that letter. So we can go through that too. And then also, members, we are talking about a, what is it, I think for MMB, since 2011 they've increased their budget by 23%. And we're asking them to try and slow the growth back to just 3.5 years ago, not even to the full 2011 session. So if we can't get a handle on this, this is going to jeopardize things like health care in the state. This is going to jeopardize our schools. This is going to jeopardize our schools and roads. So with that, Commissioner, we look forward to having you come back. We have a whole list of members that have some more questions for you. And members, we are in recess. We're going to call the State Government Finance Committee to order. We left off with some questions for Commissioner Franz. Commissioner Franz, if you can join us at the table. First question that I want to ask, Representative Quam had some questions regarding the spreadsheet related to the gain-sharing program, or I should say the Achievement Award program that the department has issued. And so I'm wondering, Commissioner, can you provide us with answers to Representative Quam's questions? I think the first one was dealing with line three, if there's any relation between the two individuals, and then the if we can start with that, that'd be helpful.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the answer to the first question is that that's an extremely common name, and as far as we can tell, they're not related. The staffs are not related.
Okay. And then, Commissioner, on the other question, I'm trying to remember. I wish Representative Quam was here. Question.
Madam Chair,
do you remember, Commissioner? Yeah, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I think one of the things he wanted to get an example for, you know, how did we determine the award, using
right.
the line 15 as an example. And so one of the things is that this particular employee was doing two employee jobs at that time, and in order to get things done on time, he actually worked very long hours, saved the state money not having to hire someone at that time. So we have ranges from anywhere from $0 to $1,000, and it was determined that a $750 award was appropriate in that situation based on the hours worked and the amount of effort by that employee.
Okay. And then I've got Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, I was looking at the operating expense from the page 3 of the governor's budget book, January of 2017. And I've noticed those operating expenses went up from $875 million back in 14, and that, this is all funds, I realize that, to $1,387,000 in 17, and I also know that there was like 311 or whatever that came out of $1,387,000 for the insurance rebate. But bottom line is, it appears that the operating expenses have gone up, all funds in MMB, by about $200 million since 14. And I was curious, as you were looking at things that need to be adjusted possibly relative to the proposed budget, what drives a $200 million increase, even though it's all funds, on an $875 million start?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, I don't have that schedule in front of me, but if you, to the extent you're looking at, that includes the CGIP $1 billion number in that number, that is one of the areas of programs that grows pretty a lot, and it is a self-funded health, insurance program. So I'm not sure what part that plays. But in addition, are you talking about some of the projected costs in the governor's budget for 18 and 19?
Madam Chair, actually, I was looking at actual 14. And again, all funds, and then estimated 17. But I did subtract out the, was it $311 million or whatever for the insurance thing, or 300 and whatever we spent there. So there's about a $200 million difference in the operating expenses. And I'm just curious what would drive that type of a thing, unless, you know, I don't have the breakdown on the special funds as far as their individual operating expenses, because it's not in the book.
Commissioner?
No, Madam Chair, I'm going to have to get that schedule to go through that with you. I'm sorry, I just don't have, I know what you're talking, part of what we were doing at that point was doing some money in the IT area. We put on a new program for our recruiting system, and so that we could have an online recruiting system so you could submit your applications online. So that was one of the, there's some IT projects in that mix. So I'm going to have to get that schedule. I'm sorry, I don't have that in front of me, and go through that with you, but if that's okay.
Sure.
Representative Vogel?
And just one other thing, as long as we're gathering information, the other thing that I had questioned before is the average compensation cost per employee, the FTE, went from what I can see a little over $99,000 a year in actual 16 to estimated 17 of almost 120. Maybe when we're following up too, if I could get some detail, because this is a really strong jump. Recognizes total compensation, but for everybody, if you average that across the board, 120,000 or thereabouts seems really high.
Madam Chair,
Commissioner,
I'll get that information for you, but you should know that in one of those years, the insurance itself went up like over 9% for the cost of insurance for the individuals. Anyway, but we'll get that information and show you there. But there are some insurance costs in there, as well as some contract costs that were negotiated. But I'll get that information for you.
Representative
Holden. Thank you, Madam Chair. Any idea how long that might take, or?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative, this afternoon.
Oh, great.
If that's okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Nash. Okay. All right. Members, thank you, Commissioner. I don't see any other questions at this point. Representative Johnson for the Commissioner.
For the Commissioner.
Okay.
One question I had, Commissioner, having to do with appropriations. If I understand this bill, it writes into the statute, if a budget isn't passed into law by the end of the previous budget, agencies and programs will continue at 95% of the previous appropriation. So it's somehow like you're being punished for matters not getting resolved in that effect. Can you give me your comments, and is that a sensible thing to do in terms of the running of your state agency?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative, well, that's clearly a big policy issue, in part for the legislature to decide whether they want to require an appropriation for government going beyond the biennial year. And so, you know, I certainly believe, and I think the governor's been supportive of requiring the legislature to make its appropriation by the end of the biennium and not have this automatic spending provision in place. So our position is that it really is abdicating the responsibility of the legislature to appropriate funds going forward. But I just might want to add, Madam Chair, I just wanted to clear up, you know, you were concerned about our responses to your letter, but I really have to say that you and Chair Kiffmeyer sent a letter on December 22nd, and I responded on February the January 6th, 2 weeks later, provided some information there, and then followed up with a letter on February the 2nd, I believe, so February 3rd. Every single question was answered. Now, you may not like some of our answers, but every single question was answered. I'm happy to go over that with you in the future, but I believe we've responded to every question you've raised and testified as well as at your request.
Well, Commissioner, I asked you specifically to provide a prioritization of if things were different, what would you do? What was your most important, and what was your most important programming that you have in each of the agencies, and what was the least, making it basically from 1 to 10? And you've yet to provide any of that information.
And I'm sure I
every single agency.
I answered that question. Like I said, you may not like the answer, but I answered the question.
It's not an answer.
But it is an answer, and the governor has directed us to require the legislature to provide your decisions about what cuts you want to make in government services. We've already provided our best estimate of what we should spend, and that was in the governor's budget and now his supplemental budget. That's a 3,000-page document. We've worked very hard to articulate the educational opportunities we want to expand, the health opportunities we want to expand, the opportunities in a capital budget for bonding. We've put forth all of those requirements and all of those priorities, and we're not going to go do your work for you. So we've already laid out our priorities. They're in the budget. If you want to cut services, if you want to cut the forecasting group, if you want to cut the budget group, that's your responsibility, and you're welcome to do it. But we disagree with that perspective,
and
we've provided you with everything you need to know.
Feedback on this, and you have failed to provide that feedback. So, yes, you are correct. We will make those decisions for you. So, members, any other questions? Representative Nash.
Wow. Okay. Commissioner, just a question for you. You talked about some measures that have created some considerable savings, right? In the history of you being here, have there been savings commensurate enough that you said, hey, we should look at some headcounts to cut? Have you ever looked at that? Have you ever done that? Because in the private sector that so many of us come from, when we're able to create savings, we'll cut people. And you know, you're asking for 8.75 new people, and there's a growth. We've talked about the growth of government. And I'm just wondering, have you ever done that?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative, as I testified several weeks ago, just at MMB, this reorganization of the Human Resources Department, we eliminated one of the top positions because we felt we could be more adequately served without that additional position. We've also eliminated an HR position, worked with admin to have a sharing of HR duties. Those save $300,000 to $400,000 a year just in those moves alone. So we do that every chance we have to do that. But I just want to go back to something else you raised earlier, Representative, and you, Representative Vogel, about the gain-sharing system. I think one of the things that you were intimating was that we weren't following the law. But I as a lawyer, I went back and reread the law again, and I have to say that I find your interpretation lacking in terms of legal analysis. And the gain-sharing statute that exists currently says the commissioner shall establish a program to provide one-time bonus compensation to state employees for efforts made to reduce the cost of operating state government or ways for providing better or more efficient state services. End of sentence. The next sentence begins, the commissioner may authorize an executive branch appointing authority to make a one-time award, going on to talk about the gain-sharing program that you discussed. We implemented the program, the shall part of that sentence, and we felt that the achievement award satisfied that statutory mandate. Now, we are concerned about how to satisfy the second part of that, which is a main statute. So whether you disagree or agree with the way we've done it, we have followed the letter of the law, and we certainly understand you're going to change the law. We disagree with the way you're going to change the law, but that's the law that stands.
Wow.
Representative Nash?
To forgive my microphone noises there. Well, thank you, Commissioner, for the lecture. Appreciate that. We had, I believe, a letter sent to the committee and testimony that said, yeah, we're not following the guidelines here. Maybe staff or somebody can remind me when that letter was, but we did get a letter essentially saying, nope, we're not doing the gain sharing, so again, I guess we're going to disagree. But, you know, it's staggering to me that your office, that you say the buck stops with you, and then again for the governor, can just sit there and make distributions under the guise of saving the state money, and you say you're following the letter of the law for the gain sharing. Well, then show me the savings. Where are the savings? Because the letter of the law in the statute says that you're going to provide an X number of dollars of savings and up to 10% of that. So show me the money. I think that was somewhere in the movie somewhere, but show me the money so that you've saved, Commissioner. And maybe you can provide that offline because I don't think you brought that with you today. But I would love to see what was saved, because if you're following the letter of the law, and I'd like to believe that you just told me you are, but where is the savings?
Madam Chair, Representative, you're not following the letter of the law in your interpretation. We followed the letter of the law. We implemented the shall sentence, and we provided the achievement awards. We have not provided the gain-sharing system because we weren't funded for it, and we think it's a problematic program, and we need more assistance to develop that going forward. So we did follow the law, with all due respect, Representative.
Representative Nash? Well, Madam Chair, and I'll be done after this, but so you just said a couple seconds ago that you are following the letter of the law, and then you said just now that you aren't because you've changed. I guess you're not going with the legislative intent, perhaps. And yeah, I'm not a lawyer, and I'm okay with saying that. But from my reading and from the reading of a lot of people around this place who are lawyers, you're not. And the simple fact of the matter is that the law says that you should be saving us money. And you should be able to point to something, a line in the sand or a piece of paper that says, right here, look, we found some savings. Give this person a reward. But instead, you're saying, well, this is a person who's a really good guy. And he did his job with a smile. Here's $750. We're all very proud of you. And, Commissioner, this is outrageous. This is not our money. This money belongs to the people of Minnesota, and we're frittering it away. And you and I will just disagree on whether you're following the letter of the law or whatever. I would beg to differ. I don't think that's the case. Because this law was put in to mimic what was going on and is going on in the private sector that says, you know, Joe Slobotnick saved us a bunch of money at the XYZ company. Let's give them a reward. I don't see it. You've yet to be able to provide a spreadsheet that says, here's how much money we've saved. And this justifies the expenditures of $6.7 million of Minnesotans' monies. So, thank you.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I didn't want to go back there, but since you've invited it, if you read the last sentence, it says, before authorizing awards under this section, the Commissioner shall establish guidelines for the program, including but not limited to, the maximum award is 10% of the documented ED in the past savings in the fiscal year in which the savings are realized, up to $50,000. Number two, the award must be paid from the appropriation to which the savings accrued. Well, if you don't know where the savings accrued, how did you know where to take the money from to properly appropriate it?
Madam Chair, Representative, I have to take you back to the first sentence. The first sentence provides that we shall make a program to reduce the cost of operating state government for ways of providing better or more efficient state services. It does not require an actual calculation of savings. For example, the example we just talked about a little while ago, with the employee who worked, while we didn't have to replace a particular job, he worked for two jobs. There were savings there. We didn't calculate those and base the award on that calculation. We based the award on the fact that the employee provided superior effort.
Representative Vogel.
Madam Chair, when it says under this section, I would assume that means you have to read the whole section. You can't just read one sentence to say what you want. You have to look at the whole section. And when it says under not limited to, but, the award must be paid from the appropriation to which the savings accrued, how could you have paid it if you didn't document where the savings accrued? Because I'm suggesting that you have to look at the whole section in law. You can't just pull out one sentence in law and say we're following you back.
Madam Chair, I'll take you back to the first sentence. The second sentence was made. We were unable to put in operation a program that was able to calculate the savings in that particular fashion. We were able to put into place an achievement award system that provided for better or more efficient services by rewarding employees appropriately.
Representative Vogel.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess we can go round and round, but I think it's pretty clear, if anybody is listening, to know that you have to follow the entire section because that's what it says and the rules there. So it's kind of an endless debate, but I think it's quite clear. Thank you.
Representative Omar.
Thank you, Chair. So, Commissioner, I have a question about this particular section we're talking about. And So it says here, the commissioner should establish guidelines for the program, including but not limited to, and then it lists this, these three guidelines. Does that mean that you have some waiver in which of the guidelines that you use? Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative, clearly the language provides that there are other options you can use. The not limited to means that you can go beyond this list to determine how you base your awards.
Representative Omar?
Chair. Commissioner, so it sounds like you have done so.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, yes, Representative.
Okay. Madam Chair?
Representative Omar?
I just feel as if we are sitting in this committee scolding you for doing something that we have given you permission to do so. And I feel like as legislators, I might be new here, but part of our job is to make sure that if the guidelines that we have created are not clear enough to make it more clear. And I know that
no.
From the questions that are being raised and the particular animosity that it feels like this committee has shown to you, it seems unwarranted. And I think as a state employee and as legislators, there should be a particular respect that needs to take place. And it is really important for us to conduct ourselves with particular respect and class and to make sure that the people who have sent us here to represent them see us as such, as representatives that are working on behalf of them and people who are not being petty about political motives. And so I commend you for being here. Madam Chair, the other question I have is, we've talked a lot about the growth of government, and for me, what I've learned since I've been here is that how much our budget has been structurally balanced in the last couple of years under our governor. And I've also learned that we have a huge surplus, $1.6 billion. And to me, I might be wrong, but that signals the kind of government that is working in a way that it hasn't worked before. And that should be something that should be commended. And so I know Representative Vogel, I think, earlier alluded to the fact that your office might have grown 25% in its budget. Is that true? Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't have the figures. Do you have to, it depends whether you're talking year by year over 4 or 5 years. The annual growth in spending has been anywhere from 4 to 5 to 6%. But I'd have to go back and look at what time period. The key is, what time period are you measuring from what point to another point to see what the growth is? I don't have that in front of me, Madam Representative.
Madam Chair, I'm also wondering, what are some mandates that the legislature has created for your office that have made it necessary for your office to grow, if it has grown?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair, Representative, well, that's one of the things that we really have a lot of reports and studies that we prepare for the legislature throughout the year. Well, one of the things that we have to do, obviously, and we want to do, is to make sure that the legislature in its role is advised of what MMB is doing in the way of HR, in the way of training, in the way of affirmative action. We also do the same thing in terms of the budget reports. We monitor and regularly report out budget changes to the legislature and the economic forecast. We do those every twice a year. So there are a number of things that we do that we think not only provide information to the public, but also to our friends, the legislature here, and with fiscal staff, we share a lot of information. The entire budget system is developed so the legislative staff have access to, and we work together from common information. So we have a lot of responsibility. We take that responsibility very seriously, that we have a lot of responsibility to communicate and provide information as requested by the legislature, and so we take seriously the requests that we get and respond as quickly as we can for those requests. But we think we keep pretty busy both responding to the legislature and responding to other agencies to keep our government operating as efficiently as we can.
Madam Chair, and I know there's a lot of conversations here in this committee about working in private sectors and in corporations. And so for those of us who have experience in working in corporate America know that when you are cutting a particular budget and you are getting rid of what we like to call here an FTE, which is people, right? It's personnel cut. That you have to figure out what is the job that they're doing that you no longer need. And so it is important for us to, here in this committee, to discuss what parts of the mandates that you have, that you use personnel for, that people are fulfilling, that we want to get rid of, that we no longer need. So that the Minnesotans who sent us here know what we deem unnecessary for their government to do on behalf of them. They are very clear in that. And so I would like to make sure that as we move forward with this bill, and as I know that the chair would most likely move this bill as is, as disappointed as many of us might be, I would like for us to have it on the record, what job do you think should no longer be fulfilled? What mandate should we no longer do? What are you telling Minnesotans that it's no longer unnecessary for their government to do? And so I might be new, I might be naive, but I am really interested in knowing what you find unnecessary within the job that our government is doing currently. Thank you.
Members, any other questions for Representative for Commissioner France? Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for coming today, Commissioner. I wish it was under better terms and situations, but thank you for answering questions. I kind of watch on the news and keep up on emails and all that stuff, like all of us do here at the legislature, I would imagine. But it seems to me in the last few months, the state has done pretty well. So Representative Lamar mentioned the surplus. So we're, there's many states that don't have that surplus. So that's a plus. But it seems like, I wonder if you could speak briefly about some of the awards. It seems like Minnesota's been recognized by the business community about being a success. I would imagine that some of your staff that meets some of the business owners and helps them through the process and to be successful. I would imagine, it seems like there was quite a few good bond rating, maybe you can mention some of the positives that are going on. It seemed like there was a whole big list of, that I would argue that our staff is helping create a better Minnesota, but something's going on. And so I'm just wondering if you can mention some of those successes, like the
Madam Chair, Representative, I think one of the things that we all need to remember from time to time is how well Minnesota does function, how well we operate as a state. Our business environment, our economy is so diverse, and we're so fortunate because it really mirrors the U.S. economy. And so if the U.S. economy is doing well, the Minnesota economy typically is doing well. Obviously, we have some sectors like the ag sector and the mining sector that are not doing as well, but it goes to the fact that our economy is so diverse that the other parts of that economy continue to function quite well. But it's that economy that works well, that provides the revenue that we all talk about and how much we want to spend for government, how much we want to spend on education. But there have been a number of cases. We were ranked number 3 just recently by gosh, now I'm blanking on the agency that, that gave it to us. But and that was because of a lot of factors. They looked at how do we manage government? How do we provide services? How do we provide health care? And I think that's the thing that, that the governor has really wanted to articulate in his budget, and where we're having some disagreements about is what do we do with the investments opportunities that we have? We are fortunate to have now 4 years in a row with positive budget balances going forward. There are very few states that can demonstrate that. And so I think the key is, what do you do with that? And I appreciate the debate. What do you do with that? And I think that the governor believes that we can both invest in education and health care, and we can also save for the future. And I really respect deeply the decision and desire by many people to keep the cost of government down, try to reduce services whenever we can, and we do that. But I think one of the things that the rating agencies, when they look at us, and they upped their rating to AAA last summer, it was a recognition that we have a really a well-functioning government budget process. We have a really incredibly strong economy, and our debt is relatively minor or modest compared to other states. So it's that low debt burden that we have relative to other states. I mean, obviously we have bonding bills that we have to borrow for, and also pension liabilities that we have to deal with. But when you take those and let a third party look at you and evaluate the state, we're quite pleased with the way that we've been able to manage that government. But going forward, the key is, you know, if you want to maintain structural balance, then you obviously have to keep your spending within your revenue. We understand that, and that's why I think we've been successful. It's not just that the revenues are growing, but that we're keeping our spending. We only buy what we can afford. And I think that we all have to agree on what that is. I know there's a lot of disagreement about that, but I do think that that's key is, can we maintain structural balance going forward into the future? But thank you for your question.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner, I'm always a little confused. So our population grows in Minnesota, but then we're always to shrink people that are doing real jobs, you know. So I'm always confused. I mean, it just seems like it would be, you know, say you're a teacher in a classroom. I mean, you can't, you know, and so 1 year you have, you know, growth, or every year you have growth. I mean, at some point you have to add another teacher, I would think. So I would imagine, you know, so many people in revenue or something are auditing. I mean, at some point, there's more businesses, there's more people. You have to have more auditors, I would think. It just is, am I not getting that right? Or is there so much with this new modern world with all this technology? Are we just so much better that we just need less people? It just, I don't know.
Well, Madam Chair, there's a couple of parts to that. First of all, we really haven't invested in the infrastructure that we need to maintain some of the services you're requiring. But we have seen a 3-4% increase in population since 2011. It's like taking the population of Bloomington and Duluth and saying we adding those, and that's how much population we've grown in the last since 2011. So that's the 3-4% pressure increase on spending. And also, we've had about a 7% increase on inflation since 2011. And we also have, I think, demanding more demand for services. But part of the other problem, though, is in the infrastructure support, both in IT, which we really haven't supported. We brought online a new accounting system in 2011, and we haven't upgraded that since. And it's going to go no longer be supported on January 1, 2018, if we don't make that upgrade for that system. And so, and it's not just IT infrastructure. It's people infrastructure. It's the roads and bridges, the bonding bill structure. I mean, to go, we're on 22 or 23 months now without a bonding bill. I mean, I'm sorry, but the need is growing. We had over $3 billion in requests, and the governor's proposed a $1.5 billion bonding bill. I mean, there's a lot of need out there, legitimate need to fix what we have, and in some cases, like the University of Minnesota, to add a new medical school or a new science building at the University of Minnesota Duluth. So there are lots of opportunities that we have. The reason businesses stay here and grow here is because they can make money here. They make money because things work. They can get their product to work, they can get their services delivered, and they know that they have a government that's functioning, providing health care and education. That mix is pretty special. Minnesota is a very special state, and it's something you can easily, if we don't take care of, can easily lose. And that's our concern, and that's why we have this debate today. Thank you.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just one more quick question. It took me a while to kind of learn this, you know, as a member, and some of the members are, you know, might not know this or the public, but so when we talk about your employees, you know, sometimes the executive branch employees, it sounds like it's just Governor Dayton and his team, that's what we're talking about. But can you just briefly kind of tell us who all these employees are? Because I think, you know, the perception is it's, you know, it's Governor Smith or Governor Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Smith and their team, you know, in the corner office, and there's just, you know, 30,000 people. And so who are these? I mean, because I think there's always been some confusion here in the building, like, oh, you know, we're going to give it to the governor because, you know, we got to cut this governor's staff, you know, like, it's, you know, it's not really his team. I mean, it's under, but you can kind of speak to that briefly because we all can learn from that.
Representative, no, I think that's a good point. I mean, one of the things, remember, 90% of the state budget goes out in direct payments to schools, to individuals, to colleges, to universities, to hospitals. So that's 90% of this budget we're talking about. Almost $46 billion goes out the door in payments. The other 10% is made up of some institutional, the state hospital, the state prisons, which are expensive, and state government, state workers as we know it. So it's that group of workers, the people who work in the state hospitals, who work in the prisons, or the troopers on the state, the people who, the healthcare workers who work in these retirement homes, and also people who work in some of our small group homes around the state. I mean, there are so many people out there that are providing, whether it's the state parks, services, that are providing these services, that it really, it's amazing how much they touch other Minnesotans' lives. And it's that connection that we think really supports the need for more service, not cutting service. So these people that connect with the workers across the state of Minnesota, they're not telling us to quit providing these services. They need these services. Their services are getting more complex, and they're getting more expensive. So, I mean, I think that we really have to respect, because some of these people do come to work for public service, and they enjoy what they do. They enjoy providing these benefits to people. Now, to the extent you think about Myron Franz as a worker in the state office building, that's not where the real value comes, I can assure you. The real value comes to these people who are contacting, in daily contact with Minnesotans around the state. Thank you.
Representative Lilly?
That's it for now. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Unish Odin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Franz. So we're talking about a budget. We're talking about, I think you called it, a people infrastructure, the state workers of Minnesota. And this committee is asking our state to make some pretty severe budget changes. And they've asked the committees to also prioritize how they would make those cuts, which is a pretty cruel thing because I think we all know that it's going to come down to people. And that's what is going to happen here. We are talking about people, about Minnesotans that are going to lose their jobs. I think some of my notes are saying between 3,000 and 4,000 people losing their jobs. In an economy that's growing, in a state that is winning awards for their productivity and their quality of life. Now, what happens to those people that lose their job from the state? Are they going to now have to go on unemployment? Are we going to have to support them in that way? Are we going to have to do some job training? Because I think Mr. Colin Jeske from yesterday mentioned that a lot of these people have very specific skills. And if you have that specific skill and now your job is cut from the state, what's going to happen? I mean, who wants to say that we just put over 4,000 people out of a job? For what reason? Because we want to be super duper mean and mean with our budget? I think you have to look at the balance of what we're trying to do here and how we're going to support the state and how we're going to support the people in this state. And I don't see how cutting all of these jobs, because you know that they're not going to be, you know, cutting out staples and paper and that sort of thing. It comes down to people, and it comes down to function. And it really, I'm a new person here. I guess I don't probably understand the whole logistics of this. But what makes, what I get out of this is that this is going to affect people and families, and it's going to be just as devastating as the economic downturn we had a few years ago. And I don't quite understand why it has to be the way it is.
Members, any other questions for the commissioner? Thank you, Commissioner. Members, final comments to the bill. Representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually wanted to answer Representative Omar's question. So what I could tell in looking through this bill, and where I think kind of thinking in buckets around where I felt the flags were around some of these places where we felt like we could cut around some equity stuff. We could get rid of the Human Rights Office. We could slash it by, what was it, 20-some%, a quarter of their budget. That has had cases in 81 counties throughout our state. So it has effects in rural Minnesota. It has effects with marginalized communities. We could cut the statewide recruiter from MNB, which has had huge gains in making our workforce look more like Minnesota. So we can cut equity. That's what we can do. That is one area. We can also cut and not be as effective. So I'm sure all of us here get the emails from our constituents, the calls, they need help with a different agency, and are thankful when we can turn something around quickly. That may change, that we may not be able to deliver on the effectiveness for our constituents. I don't feel like these are the values that we as Minnesotans stand on, and so I see this as a very troublesome time. I think there is absolute growth for the sake of growth. Does it need to happen? But when you sacrifice equity and effectiveness to get to where you're going, I think that is a bad idea. And so I am in strong opposition to this for many reasons, but those are two reasons in particular. As someone from Greater Minnesota, someone who wants our workforce and our government to better reflect the communities, the diverse, beautiful, wonderful state that we are, and I think this what we have in front of us takes us a step back. And so I will be voting no to send this forward.
Representative Flanagan.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
To echo just some of the comments of Representative Olson, as one of 11 people of color and indigenous folks who serve in the House of Representatives, it's encouraging that we increased our numbers dramatically by more than half in this last election. But I think that we really, that's only part of the battle. Another part is making sure that our state as a whole, and in particular, state employees, reflect the folks that we seek to represent. I can't tell you how often, I hear from constituents about what a difference it makes having folks who look like them or come from their community. Really impacts how accessible they feel the government is to them and to their families and communities. And this is one of those pieces. When I think about the cuts to the recruiter position and just the incredible commitment that the governor has really had to racial equity, that just flies in the face of a lot of folks who still don't feel completely and fully represented both here at the Capitol, but also just broadly in our state of Minnesota. So it's really troubling to me. The other piece that I think is about access and making sure that people are seen and heard and valued here is actually the campaign subsidy. And, we've got folks on both sides of the aisle who take advantage of this program and make running for office for them more accessible. And my opponent used it this last time around, so did I. And I think that we want to do as much as we can to make state government, being a public servant, be that as a state employee or as someone who wants to run for office, more accessible, not less accessible. And I think that is truly in line with Minnesota values of providing that access, having folks see themselves reflected in the people who serve them, both here in the legislature, but also out in the community, at state hospitals, in our state parks, in the office of the Department of Revenue, and our public employees and those folks who work here and for the state are just, again, just extensions and reflections of who we are as a state. So I'm deeply troubled by so many aspects of this bill that it would take me a very long time to run through all of them. But just broadly, it's about access and folks seeing themselves reflected within the state of Minnesota. And we have a lot of work to do. This omnibus bill leaves much to be desired. Thank you.
Representative Nash.
Just tear the band-aid off. Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to address a comment that has been made that we're being uncollegial or punitive. You know, folks, we sit in this room, and on any given day that we have committee, you'll see small agencies who would love to get an appropriation of $6.7 million and put it to good use. Think about that. We hear from them on a regular basis, and we make decisions for them where $6.7 million is a big deal. And perhaps I'm a little passionate when it comes to this because I think, and keep in mind, when we come to this committee, when you get assigned to this committee, you're here to look at pretty much every dollar that the state government spends. So is it uncollegial to ask that we not waste money? I don't think so. I mean, we talk about, well, how does Minnesota work? What is Minnesota nice? What do people in outstate Minnesota want? Well, I think that if you boil it down to this idea that people across the state are being taxed to appropriate this money, that from my read of the program and from the testimony that we've heard is not following the letter of the law, that's a big deal. Think about that in the lens of these small agencies or people who just don't want to be taxed anymore. So as you think about your opposition or support of this bill, think about the people who would prefer to not be taxed. That money is being wasted on this. Or think of these small agencies that we hear, and they do great work. You know, we hear a lot of small agencies come before us. That $6.7 million is a big deal. But we've wasted $6.7 million on gain sharing. So members, I think this is a bill that makes a lot of great strides. And I'm pleased with where we are. I'm pleased that it's moving forward. And I'm voting yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple questions for you. Is that possible?
Sure.
So are you, I see we're encouraging that we're cutting, I'm sorry, not cutting, mandating savings in these departments. We're not, right? Is that the word? So are we doing it on the House budget?
Representative Lilly, if you look on the spreadsheet, you'll see that the House budget has a reduction of over $4 million.
So is that a yes?
Yes.
Okay. So Madam Chair, are we cutting like the Sergeant of Arms, or not the sergeant, but like the House staff and the House research staff? Are we cutting there, Madam Chair?
No.
Madam Chair, I'm curious why we can't find savings or efficiencies.
Or Representative Lilly, are you suggesting that we cut House staff?
Madam Chair, I'm asking you why you picked and choose, you know, why in your there must have been something going on there that you felt that it wasn't appropriate. So why one area is it appropriate and then not other areas? So I'm just curious.
Are you advocating to cut House staff, Representative Lilly?
Madam Chair, I don't think I said that.
Well, I'm just asking you. So is that your desire? Is that what you wish to have happen?
No, it isn't. But is it yours? And or why? What are they doing, Madam Chair, that you find successful?
I think, Representative Lilly, when you're looking at this budget, as I told you, we're already cutting $4 million from the House to pay for other needs within the state of Minnesota. We're allocating these funds to help our schools, to help our roads, to help our health care system. That's what this bill does, is we're saying that the growth in government, when you look at MMB in particular, they've had a growth in their budget from 2011. Just in 6 years, their budget has grown by over 22%. Mm-hmm. You can't find that in any private sector where you're going to have a business that has grown by over 22%. In fact, I think the commissioner had highlighted that it was even more than that. So, you know, I think that when you're looking at agencies that are growing, even the Department of Administration, by 18%, and that was less than 6 years. If you look at the Department of Revenue, where are they at here? You've got... Here's the Human Rights Department. Their department has grown by over 23%. I mean, that's significant growth in government, Representative Lilly. Are you saying that within the last 6 years that we don't have the capabilities to say we're going to reprioritize things and we're going to dedicate this towards our schools and towards growing our economy? Was that more of your priority, is rather let's just grow government instead of actually putting these dollars where the taxpayers expect it to be, with job growth, with our schools, with our roads and bridges? Is that what you would rather do?
Madam Chair, I like you're pretty good at this, but it, so you couldn't find in the $1.6 billion, you couldn't find any money to fund personal care attendants, schools, maybe a road here and there. You couldn't figure out a way to make it successful without cutting 23% from on, you know, just one area.
Well, let me ask you this, Representative Logan. Do you think that government should actually grow? Should agencies grow by 23% within 6 years? Should agencies grow by 43% within 6 years? Should agencies grow by 18% within 6 years or less than that? Do you think that the taxpayers are expecting government to grow at that rate? Maybe 1% or 2%, but 18%? 23%, 43%, do you really think that government should grow at that rate? In fact, what rate, Representative Lilly, do you think government should grow? Should it be 50%? Should it be 80%? Or do you think it should be every 2 years, let's grow by 20%? What rate to you is sufficient? Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's an interesting discussion, but I don't think that's what your committee's done here this year. You've just said cut. You haven't said, and a bunch of testifiers have mentioned, just cut. You don't say, hey, you know, a couple of years ago, one of us passed, or as a body, we passed some rules or some laws that mandate that certain functions are done. So we don't say, you know, maybe we should not do that part of work. I don't know that we really determined what work, you know. Yes, there's growth. I get it. I appreciate that. And I don't, you know, it's easy to argue that there's too much, but we don't really know what tasks are being accomplished or done. I mean, it's you're throwing out information, but it really doesn't answer the question.
Well, Representative Lilly, I know what's not being done, the game sharing program.
Okay.
Representative Lilly, any final comments? Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I listened to a lot of the retirement speeches that we all give, and I don't know if you've been there or not. I haven't noticed, but a lot of us will thank our staff. And, so I do appreciate our staff. So I don't know who you would cut here, and I don't know why you would. And actually, I appreciate your staff. Like your Many of your people are vital to this operation as well as ours and our nonpartisan staff, as well as the people that sit up in front of us. But also, there's other people around the state doing hard work that are I would imagine, doing a vital task. So by your bill, you say growth of government is unsustainable. That sounds great. I agree with it, you know, if you just throw that out there. But it's just not factual, perhaps. But we don't know. You haven't proved the case. Maybe one case, possibly in gains shared. But beyond that, I mean, is that what you make your whole budget? So then you're going to, like, drive this. It's like a movie, like Thelma Louise. You're just going to drive us off the cliff here, the state, who's succeeding. We have great workers. We're succeeding as a state. And here you are driving your little Thelma Louise car off the cliff. And then, you know, we're going to be here this summer, I would imagine. I don't know if there's a governor's veto letter somewhere, but I can't see him signing it. I hope, I don't think we're done here. You know, I mean, you're very bright. I'm certain you know that. So this is your first move, maybe. But it's just kind of a big, poorly planned out effort. And I'm just seeing you drive this car pretty fast somewhere it's not good to go, like off this cliff. And you're going to drive us to like a special session, I'm afraid. And I hope you're happy. But I don't want to face my voters when I, you know, because they blame us all. They don't just blame you because you had a not a very good bill or whatever, but they're going to blame us all. And I know you know that's true. And so when you go back to Plymouth, you're not going to be able to sit on your deck and have your, you know, whatever they do in Plymouth. I don't, you know, have your steaks out there, you know. You're not going to be able to be there this summer partly because of this bill and other bills that are going through this body. So I wish you'd have been, I'm disappointed because I thought we could have honed in, and if there was government waste, we could have found it, and we could have, everybody at this table would have gone, yeah. You know, I've been on capital investment for years, and when you go on these trips, every once in a while you get to a project, and it's not very good. And you get back on the bus, and you got the bus chatter, right? And everybody kind of goes, you know, that one's not really very good. You know, and we would have joined together as a team and figured out if there was waste. I think we could have done there. So I'm very disappointed.
Representative Ogun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Lilly, you were always so loud in the back of the bus. But, no, you know, this is a classic example, I think, of Republican philosophies in terms of spending and inefficiencies and everything else, and of course Democratic philosophies, and that's why we have two separate parties and we agree to disagree so often. But there's been much said here today, I think, that really has to be taken in context. And in business, and contrasting it with government, let's not forget that businesses that are not efficient, that businesses that don't keep up with the times, that businesses that have too much overhead, poor marketing and everything else, go bankrupt. And Sears and Kmart and those boys are right on the edge of that because they have not kept up with the times. It's incumbent on all of us, whether we're Democrats or Republicans, to look at government because that's our job. Okay? So who controls business spending and everything else? That's the board of directors and that's the shareholders. And the ultimate result is you make money, you lose money, you go out of business. Government has nothing like that. Government's only got the legislature. Okay? Government can keep going for as long as they can tax. And I got to remind you that Governor Dayton in his first term instituted the largest tax increase in the history of Minnesota at $2.1 billion. And we talk about a $1.6 billion surplus. Well, our philosophy is, of course, we're overtaxed, obviously. And it started that way. And my philosophy happens to be the $1.6 billion surplus has been generated by increased business activity and increased jobs and more people paying taxes. And our ideal is that we don't want to pay so many taxes because people are even struggling today, even though we're out of the recession. And if we as legislators
if we as government don't look at ways that we can improve, ways that we can cut fat, because corporations have to do that or they lose. If we don't do that, if we don't go through this process, then we're going to disagree about it. But then we are very remiss, because we all know that government can be much more efficient. And this idea of 31 or 33,000 people working in just the administrative areas that we look at, if you walked up to somebody on the street, one of your constituents, and said, there's 33,000 people working for the state gov finance group, minutes and management of budget and everything else, they'd be astounded. They would have no idea. They would have thought that'd be the entire government. So without us asking these hard questions and making these hard decisions, the only alternative is taxes are going to go up. And any Econ 101 guy will tell you that increased taxes are a drag on the economy, they're a drag on individual people's pocketbooks, and it will draw us into eventually an uncompetitive situation, which we have now in the state of Minnesota being a high tax state. I ask you, when was the last time 3M built a new plant in Minnesota? Okay? You know, what about Medtronic leading the state with their inversion stuff? When was the last time General Mills built a new plant in Minnesota? They haven't, because we're uncompetitive. And if we continue down this road, we're going to be worse. So we got to make the hard choices. This is a great start. I really believe this is a great start. And we all know that it's not the end word on this. But for our constituents, whether they be Democrat or Republican, we have to do something different, because growth at 22% or 21% or 25% or whatever it might happen to be is, truthfully, unsustainable. And when we turn around and make investments in Minute and everything else, we demand a return on investment just like business does, and we're not getting it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'll add to this discussion. I really think that the narrative that the Republicans are promoting, that our state government is bloated, is simply not true. In fact, as I said before, the number of state employees per capita is one of the lowest in the nation, not on the high end. We manage a very lean workforce in the state of Minnesota, 15th, I believe, is what the Wall Street Journal said. So let's dispense with that idea first and foremost, that we have this bloated state government. In fact, as Representative Omar and others have so eloquently noted, we have a budget surplus, and the fact that Governor Dayton's policies help put us in that direction, I think, is a plus. Representative Ugrum, we're going from deficit spending to deficit spending under Clinton's administration for I don't know how many years, and I would much prefer working under the structurally balanced budget of Governor Dayton. And we have a projected surplus, and the reason we have these things, quite frankly, the reason the state works is to a large extent because state government works, because the employees here are working hard to make sure that our state operates in the way it should operate. So we can never forget that fact. Madam Chair, our budget bill reflects our values. And when I look at the Republican tax bill, for example, I see that millionaires get a tax cut in the omnibus tax bill of $1.61 million to expand the estate tax. Well, you could take half of that millionaire estate tax giving to the millionaires and apply that to your bill, Madam Chair, and we could resolve almost half of the tax cuts you put forth here. The things that I value, I'm not so interested in these tax cuts for millionaires. What I am interested in is our state workers, making sure they're treated properly and fairly. I'm interested in security of our data to ensure that we have cybersecurity. Not funding that is ridiculous. Customer service, serving our vulnerable adults and members of society that we have in the state of Minnesota, that's where we should be investing. That's where we should be putting our money. Madam Chair, I'm sure you received, as I did, the letter from the governor back
in March 13th, where he lays out quite clearly that he would not accept an arbitrary 10% across-the-board reduction. And if you're going to do reductions, to clearly spell out what it is you want reduced, what mandates you want removed. Well, you didn't do the 10%, you did the 20%. So, there's that. And then finally, in that same bill, or that same letter, he says that he strongly opposes including policy language unrelated to the budget in the omnibus budget bills. Well, that relates to the process here. And just knowing what the governor expects, it seems like it would be reasonable to follow those expectations, because that's where this final bill is going to head. But no, you didn't do that. Instead, you put in redistricting, rulemaking, gain sharing, school district health insurance, repealing the campaign finance public subsidy program. Madam Chair, I think we all know that you have the votes to move this bill forward, but this is a horrible bill. I mean, you take an axe, literally an axe, to do these arbitrary tax cuts throughout these state agencies without articulating what things you don't want done, what mandates you want removed. Madam Chair, we need a roll call in this, and I'll be voting no.
There has been a roll call requested, and the clerk will get to that in a moment. Members, I want to talk about a couple of things. In this bill, what we are doing is providing for Minnesotans greater transparency and accountability from state government. We have Representative Vogel's bill that is dealing with the Legislative Budget Office, so that we at the legislature have greater input and greater knowledge in knowing that the information that we're getting is true to what it's supposed to be. And I think that's a great reform for the citizens of Minnesota. We also provide greater oversight of the state auditor in that process. And we also say that we're going to end the golden parachute programs that have been put in place with the severance packages. When you have an individual that's only worked for the state government for 6 months and got $18,000 in a severance package. We are also doing some great reform here. We've got Representative Nash's bill that says we're going to have full consolidation. This was put in place in 2011. We're going to get this done. We also say that we're going to save the state some money when it comes to CGIP. If you already have an insurance plan through your spouse's employer, you can access that rather than having the state pay for the insurance. That's a cost savings to the state of $3.4 million. Overall, we're trying to get a handle on the growth of government. I don't think any citizen in Minnesota said to their elected official, I want to grow state government by 22%. That's how I want to spend the $1.6 billion in the budget surplus. Nobody is clamoring to have government grow by 22% in 6 years. Nobody. And folks, we also have some very good pieces of legislation in this. We prioritize our veterans. We expand the benefits available under the Minnesota GI Bill. We also provide for 3-year discounted burials for spouses of veterans that have died. We have also put in place a program that will help homeless veterans get a place to stay and get themselves back on their feet. And not only that, we're saying if they get themselves in trouble with the law, we are going to make sure that the courts understand a veteran that has just returned some of the challenges that they face. These are all of the good provisions that we have in this bill. But for members that have expressed concern about the tone of this, I will tell you this. At any time that I see an agency that flat out ignores what the legislative directive is, that's as clear as the day is long, you don't need a law degree to understand what the requirement is, I think that's a day that we should all be scared of. Because it can happen to any of us at any time, any administration. And we as the legislature have the responsibility to defend what we pass into law, but that is being abided by the agencies. If we don't, then there's no reason for us to be here. Folks, when it comes to the concerns that have been expressed about the governors, I am more than willing to work with the governor's office when it comes to this piece of legislation. None of this was an across the board. It was carefully thought out for each of the agencies, And yet they can't explain to me why they need a 22% growth in their agency over a 6-year period or a $200 million growth in their operating budget.
These are concerns, and we need to get a handle on this because it is truly unsustainable. And it goes back to the fact of when you're looking at the priorities that we have here, we're doing priorities like Representative Fisher's bill on the estate tax. That's part of the tax bill. And we are looking at making sure that kids can afford college tuition. That's part of the tax bill. When we're talking about families that are trying to provide tools for their student to learn, that's part of the tax bill. When we're talking about relief so that we can grow more jobs, that's part of the tax bill. That's what this is all part of. Growing jobs here in the state of Minnesota, prioritizing education, prioritizing transportation. And with that, I ask for your yes vote, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Nash.
Yep.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Detmer.
Yes.
Representative Fenton.
Yes.
Representative Flanagan.
No.
Representative Green.
Yes.
Representative Kunesh-Podein.
No.
Representative Willie.
No.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Yes.
Representative Olson.
No.
Representative Omar.
No.
Representative Pugh.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
Yes.
Representative Ugham.
Yes.
Representative Vogel.
Yes.
And Representative Ward.
On a vote of 10 to 6, the bill as amended is adopted. Members, with that, that's just okay. And now we have to adopt the actual bill. So, House File 691 as amended. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The bill moves on. Members, with that, we are adjourned.